Hey, everybody. You know, Mark and I have over 20 years of experience as therapists and as addicts in long-term successful recovery. We know better than anyone what works and what doesn't to break out of porn and sex addiction, heal betrayal trauma, and reclaim your relationship.
And we've poured all of our personal and professional recovery and healing experience into a first-of-its-kind program for addicts, spouses, and couples. We call it Dare to Connect.
At least four times every week, we engage with you in real time, in the trenches, giving you the knowledge and the tools to take back your life and relationship.
Whatever else you've done on your journey for healing and recovery, you've never done anything like this.
You know, Mark and I, we've made all the mistakes, so you don't have to. Don't reinvent the wheel.
We all know tomorrow never comes. Look, don't wait one more day to change. Claim your free two-week trial today at daretoconnectnow.com.
Hey, everybody. I'm Steve Moore.
And I'm Mark Castleman.
We know the pain and heartbreak of porn and sex addiction.
And we know the triumph of breaking completely free.
Every day, we help our clients find hope and healing.
Join us in the fight to take back your life, your marriage, and be stronger than ever.
This is the PBSC Squared Podcast.
Hey, everybody, Mark and Steve with you here on the PBSC podcast. Today, we want to talk about something I've been running into a lot lately. Well, I've actually been running into it my whole life, which is the concept of why we avoid difficult conversations.
Yeah.
And in this episode, we want to talk about how difficult conversations can actually bring true connection. Now, that sounds like an oxymoron, we know, right? But that's, wait, what is, difficult conversations bring true connection?
Oh, yeah.
Not in my experience.
Mm-hmm.
So we're gonna dig deep on that today. So let's just start it. Let's start out with, why do we avoid difficult or uncomfortable conversations?
That's a great place.
Do that.
I think there's a lot of reasons, honestly. I you know, for me, what I find in my experience is that much of, not all, but much of difficult or uncomfortable conversations are avoided on some sort of fear-based level.
Definitely.
Could be fear of rejection, right? Maybe it's fear of losing the relationship. I know addicts oftentimes struggle with that, right? If I'm my real self with my partner, you know, will they leave? Will they accept me? And honestly, spouses, I think, feel the exact same way in different regards. I am so angry and I am so frustrated and I have been hurt so deeply. If I let him really see that, you know, will he just go into shame and just kind of withdraw and, you know,
we have to go to that place
of hopelessness.
We fear if we get that real and that raw, you know, we could lose the relationship. It could blow this thing up.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and I think kind of along with that, there's anger obviously can get in the way of having uncomfortable conversations, which isn't all bad. And we've talked about anger being a secondary emotion before on the podcast. And that holds true here. Anger is a valid emotion, but if I'm not doing the work to figure out what is underneath that, my chances of trying to address a conversation just because I'm angry, the chances of that going well are pretty low, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and some of the other reasons I know for me, as I look back, not just my addiction years, but my time as a kid, through my teen years, one of the reasons we avoid difficult conversations is because we don't want to look weak or inadequate or not have all the answers or, right? I don't want to look dumb, look stupid. I want to say the wrong thing. There's all of those things that have to do with our sense of worth and value and how we're perceived by others.
Yes.
It's also a big part of it.
Well, and I think that does kind of tie in to, some of the other background pieces, right, that make up the dysfunctional ways in which we oftentimes try to come to the table, right,
and
work out things.
We need to ask the question, so where did I learn my current conversation tactics and styles and strategies? Where did this come from? And I think it's really important to take a look at that so that we can become more self-aware of, where am I exactly? How do I come across? How do I come at this? Well, absolutely. Who modeled it for you? Where did you practice?
Yeah, absolutely. Like where, who were the people in your life? And not even just that, if we talk about family culture as a whole, one thing that we don't oftentimes talk about is family roles or family systems.
Yes.
Right? Yes. Most people in a family tend to kind of fall into a certain trend or a way of doing things. I have a client that I just met with the other day. We were doing some work in the coupleship. And one of the things that we identified in that process was that the husband, growing up, he was always the peacemaker.
Yep.
Right. In the home. Yep. That was kind of his role, was to keep the peace. Everybody else was fighting. He was sort of the oil that greased the wheels. Well, that's not inherently necessarily a bad trait, but it has been frustrating for the relationship, because when issues or things come up, rather than really meeting him or meeting his wife, right, with her concerns and, what needs to happen, he kind of goes into grease the wheels mode. How do we keep this thing going along? He'll placate or he'll whatever. And really resolving the issue doesn't involve just, oh my gosh, what can I do? I'll just, whatever you say, let's just agree. Even though that may bring short-term peace, right? It closes the dialogue in the same breath.
Exactly. And a lot of the strategies that we learned in our family system or culture, they were really designed to give us short-term peace, short-term avoidance, let's just not even go there. I remember in my household, and I've talked with a lot of people over the years, we just don't talk about that at this table.
Yep.
Right. Like at the dinner table. Or I think of something that's so awkward and so taboo that we have labeled it the talk.
Oh, sure.
Because we can't talk about sex in a raw, open, vulnerable, honest way.
Yes.
So there's another thing that we avoid.
I think, so
many elephants in the room that as we were growing up, we learned, well, don't talk about that. I asked my group therapy guys, I said, so growing up, did all of you, even if it wasn't stated, did you all know where the boundaries were about what could be talked about and what couldn't? And they all said, yes, we did. We knew. You don't go past that.
Absolutely. It's kind of like one of those invisible fences you put up for a dog, with the collar. It's like,
exactly.
It's not actually there, but you get burned every time you go there. So
it's like zap.
you just stay away. Well, and one that I hear often from clients, and geez, we could do a whole podcast just on this, but is we don't cry in this family.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
We don't have emotions here.
Yep.
We don't do that. I mean, I have my mom was raised in a family where that was just said right outright, like, stop crying, suck it up. We don't do that here. That's not something we do.
Yeah.
And so we come in with all of these things just from our family, right? But it isn't even just family, and nor is it just, just friends. Oftentimes this can fall under spiritual culture, right?
Oh yeah.
There's kind of an underbelly. Again, we're not talking spiritual doctrine here. Let's emphasize that. We're talking about the culture that oftentimes orbits around our spirituality. There are terms, for example, that come up, I think, in different religious circles that set us up for trouble in real connection. Mm-hmm. So the big one that you and I were talking about this morning is forgive and forget.
Yes, forgive and forget.
We could do a whole podcast about that too.
Yes, we could.
But just because this is Mark and I's paradigm. Okay. We're not, but from both a clinical, but I would say from a spiritual perspective, the advice forgive and forget is awful. The forgive part I'm totally on board with.
Yes.
But the simple forget piece, and oftentimes we pull the second term from like some sort of scriptural reference or whatever the case may be. But if I, for example, get burned by a stove, right, I'm not going to hold a grudge with the stove. you know, stuff happens, accidents happen, whatever. If I get burned in a relationship, I think it is important for my own sanity as well as it being the, you know, the way to restore connection. It is important to be able to forgive. But asking a person to simply just forget the past, not only is not realistic, I think that it really sets, if that were done in a true sense, what does that do? That sets a coupleship up for repeating the exact same mistakes or the exact same issues.
Yeah, right? Well, your example, if like, you know, if I've been burned by the stove, it doesn't mean that I'm going to, you know, toss the stove out the window and be done with it entirely. But am I going to wear hot pad mittens on my hands?
Totally. Right? Absolutely. Next time I will have learned. Totally. And that's where that's how relationships learn and grow and evolve. But if you, and especially when you connect those two, because oftentimes the implication, right, is like, well, in order to forgive, you need to forget.
Yes.
And that's just not true. Mm-hmm. So anyway, there are many of those, right? So spiritual culture can be a part of this. Gender roles, you know, yeah. You mentioned earlier looking weak or inadequate. This isn't obviously true in all cases. Those gender roles look different from, you know, kind of culture to culture and area to area. But in American culture, for example, that, you know, being a tough guy, you know, being a guy, a manly man, right, means not looking weak, means not looking, traits like being vulnerable are shunned.
Yes.
Right. Even in our culture, the term, when my clients first hear the term being vulnerable, that's what they think of. Oh, you're telling me I need to be weak. It's got a negative context right out the gate. Right. So we have this averseness to it.
Yep. Yep. So there's a lot of places that these styles come from, and we could keep going on and on about that. let's talk really quick about what are some of the tactics that we use when we have difficult conversations, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we get into things like avoidance. I'm going to go along to get along, so I never really express my true self. Mm-hmm. Others, and I know others actually do the opposite. They get aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
I had a guy who said, well, I don't have a problem with difficult conversations. I actually think they're awesome. I stand right toe-to-toe, face-to-face,
mm-hmm.
and I just let it rip.
Yeah.
I said, well, you realize, though, that what you're describing is also an avoidance tactic, because while you're being aggressive and outspoken and getting your point across and being really confident in it,
mm-hmm.
are you really letting it go to your deep, raw core issues? And are you allowing the other person to go there as well?
Yeah.
Aggression, a control tactic that avoids, once again, doing what? Getting to the difficult, raw core of the conversation.
Yeah, I'm gonna go out on a limb here and just say, you know, there's probably the slightest of chances that that kind of approach probably doesn't create a whole lot of safety in the relationship.
Oh, you think?
it's just a thought I'm having.
Yeah. Every time we start to get close to something really meaningful, he or she goes into this big, aggressive, manipulative, you know, seems to be like they're being open, seems that they're trying to, you know, do the right things, but it's all very calculated. Right?
Sure.
And some are really good at it. You know, they're, I don't know, maybe they do sales for a living, or they're an attorney by trade, or and a negotiator, or whatever. It's hard to keep those tactics out of this really raw conversation. You're going to find yourself doing those same things.
Absolutely. Well, and another one that comes to mind, you know, is making it about right versus wrong. We've talked about this on the podcast before. This is kind of one of my soapbox issues. Connection, as we've said before, we'll say again, has very little to do with agreement.
Yes.
But oftentimes that's where we get mired. We get mired in these concepts like right and wrong or fact finding. We try to start with facts as a way to find connection when we have to use connection as a way to work out the facts. But human nature is to try to go to the less vulnerable side first.
Yes.
Right? I don't have to put myself out there if I can just tell you all the reasons why you're wrong from a morally justified position. I don't have to talk about my emotions with it, or why that's hard for me, or how that impacts me. And the problem is couples get mired because right versus wrong is a moral judgment call.
Yep.
All you've done is you've complicated the argument. Now you've got the thing you were originally fighting about, and now you've got a second battleground you got to work out, which is who's got the moral high ground.
Yep, who's got the moral high ground? This can especially be a challenge. As I look back, you know, in my deep addiction years, when my wife and I would come to a conversation, when we would allow it to go to that place of the moral high ground, I was always at a disadvantage because I'm the addict. Look at all the stuff I've done. Look at the terrible choices I've made. Look how I've hurt my wife, which is all true.
Yeah.
Yet, sure. If she wasn't careful, she could immediately take that and basically just beat me over the head because I have no moral high ground in that conversation.
Sure.
And yeah. That's an easy trap to fall into.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and yeah, we won't spend much time on this for sake of time, obviously, but as we've talked about in the past, when you make it about right or wrong, you really are entering a no-win scenario.
Yes.
Because I've had those experiences, right? I've had times where I've been able to shout down my wife, talk over her, intellectualize, right? When I was in addiction and early in therapy, I had the research, I had the schooling, I had the know-how, I had all my pie charts and graphs about why I was doing what I was doing wasn't as bad as she thought.
Yep.
And there were times where I would actually win those arguments. But what would happen as a result? One, I wasn't really winning because I wasn't being vulnerable in the first place. But two, great, I got to be right. At what cost?
Yep.
My wife's in the other room. She's been gaslit to hell because I've been, you know, mixing a bunch of truth with garbage. She feels like she's not intelligent. She feels like she's the wrong one. She feels like it's not okay to be her. Did I really win? Yeah. Sounds like a huge loss to me, right?
So it really comes down to kind of this question. Do you want to be right? Or do you want to be connected?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and I think that, there obviously is a place for this, right? And we've talked about this before. So again, we won't hit it too much, but there is a place for that, but you got to start outside of that, right? Being able to come to some sort of determination of, hey, I was wrong in this situation. Hey, I was right in this situation. Hey, this is where we made the mistakes requires vulnerability, because if you don't have vulnerability, you've got pride, shame, trauma, all those things that block that.
Exactly.
Being able to look at that.
Yeah. And we have the other things that we, you know, that add to this fortune telling.
Oh yeah.
You know, why should we even talk about this? It's just going to end up like it always does. Uh-huh. You always do this.
Yes.
Right.
Or you never listen or you
never, right.
And I see both sides of the coin, right? Both partners will oftentimes do this. This just happened in a session the other day. I had this exact thing kind of erupt and the session was a lot less affected because it kept happening, but we had to kind of keep talking it down. But yeah, we get into this attitude where we allow our past, our trauma from our past, right? As well as our fear of the future to dictate our present.
Exactly.
When we should be taking pieces from the past and the future as a way to make an informed decision without letting it dictate things for us.
Yes.
Right? Yep. It is acceptable and good, and we're going to move into how do we do this in a second, but it's acceptable and good, I think, and authentic to be able to go into a conversation owning the fact that, hey, I've got a lot of fear about this because when we've talked about the subject in the past, it just hasn't gone well.
Yeah.
Right. That is a very different way of expressing other than what you just described, right? You always do this, or it always happens that way. Because now what we're doing is we are fortune telling and we're mind reading ourselves and our partner. And we're saying, hey, this is just how it's going to go. We're saying that our ability to change this, there is no ability to change it.
Nope.
Right? That's how we started the conversation.
Yep. Can't do it. You're going to just be who you always have been, and it's going to go as it always has gone. So why bother?
You know, and then we've got the other ones, you know, like victimization, we've got rescuing, right?
Yep, all those things. Well, let's jump quickly then. And so how do we connect through hard conversations? How do we have connecting conversations that are also hard? Hey everybody, Mark and Steve here. Are you looking to take your recovery and your marriage to the next level?
We work with individuals and couples one-on-one.
With both in-person and online therapy options, you have access to the experts anytime, anywhere.
To learn more, visit us at pbsepodcast.com. Yeah.
And I would say a lot of it has to do with the attitude with which we come to these conversations.
That's so true.
Is it one where we're dreading it? Oh, here comes the misery. Oh my gosh, here we go again. Mm-hmm. Or, and as I say this, believe me, I know that it is not even close to easy. where you actually, through practice, through continual trial and error and falling on your face and getting back up, get to the place where when a hard conversation comes, you actually see it as an opportunity.
Yeah.
This is an opportunity for us to really see each other. This is for us to stop skirting around all the edges and to really get down to some deep core issues. Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's taken years and years for me and my wife to get, we're not always there, but I'd say now we're probably usually there where we're like, okay, yeah, this is a chance for us to really dig deep. Let's do it.
Yes.
And so do we come at it from a place of misery or opportunity? Your attitude going in is critical.
Absolutely. Well, and it kind of ties into what we had just talked about, right? If I'm going in, not only if I go to my partner and I express something like, hey, you always do this, or hey, this will never work. Not only am I kind of setting the conversation at the gate to not go well, I've also closed the door on my own ability to see how it ever could. And I would say that, you know, if we're going to talk about taking a break here in a minute, as we have in the past, before you go into a conversation, that should be one of those litmus tests. If I can't entertain a possibility for this going better than it has before, then I should not bother. And it is on me to go and do some work, 12-step work, reaching out to people in my support system, right? All of the different study, all the different things, spiritual connection, all the things that we've talked about, past tools on the podcast, so that I can get to a point where I can and then come back to the table.
Yep. And that's, it might seem simple or like, why would you even bring that up? But the ability to walk away and come back is a big factor in this process being successful.
Well, and it's crazy difficult. Right?
Yeah, you think?
I mean, you and I have been there. We know this. Our listeners know this. I mean, it's one, I say in my office all the time, I'm like, it's really easy to talk about these concepts, you know, where like the waterfall's running in my corner and, you know, it's all calm and the music's playing in the waiting room and whatever. But that doesn't mean, but it's a whole different ball game when it's Saturday night, it's 2 a.m., you know, and you're fighting about your in-laws for the 35th time and everyone's in their limbic system.
Yep. And we're saying just walk away and do some personal work and come back. That is not easy.
No, it's not.
But as we look at more, you know, how to's with this, right? It's one of the things you wrote here was seeking dialogue through emotions and feelings, not just facts.
Yes. Yeah. And
people say, what are you saying? We're supposed to invite our emotions and our feelings and get them out on the table.
Yeah.
I just want the facts. He did this or she did that. Mm-hmm. That's all this is about.
Yeah.
Let's stick to the facts.
And facts are facts, right? We should validate that. We kind of hit on this a minute ago. Facts are definitely facts and they do have value. It's not that we just ignore them because there is a place and a time to discuss them. But again, I mentioned this so much on this podcast. Some listeners probably find it repetitive, but I see it in my practice at least 10 times a week. Like it's just a constant because it's so human nature to go to the less vulnerable.
Yes.
Unless we proactively guide our brains to a place of mindfulness and what I'm feeling, we will default to facts because they're easier.
Right.
It's easier just to look at the situation and state it as you see it without getting into the dialogue as to why. And so couples will try to come together. And this doesn't just apply to couples. This happens in everything from business relationships to neighbors to whatever, right? Rather than trying to find some sort of a common ground through vulnerability of, hey, I, you know, when this thing happens or when we go down this road, this is the impact that it has on me. Or here are the emotions or here are the fears that I'm carrying going into this conversation.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, it's not like you're trying to sidestep the facts. You're stating them, but then you're taking it further.
Yes.
Here's the fact, but here's how that makes me feel.
Yeah.
Here's how I interpret that. Here's what that does to me or within me.
Yeah.
Go beyond that. It's a starting place, not a be all end all.
Absolutely. If I'm able to go into a conversation with my wife, which I have done many times, once we got into a healthy place with recovery and we're able to practice this, what that looks like oftentimes is going in and saying something more or less in the lines of, I got to tell you, I am so scared to bring up what I need to bring up with you. And we don't have to talk about it right now because I know it might be kind of charged, but because it's been a problem for both of us so much in the past, but I just have a lot of fear around X, you know, and I want to be able to talk about X with you. But for me, it's hard because it's because of our past conversations. And I think I have some shame around it. Right.
Yeah.
If I'm able to lead that way in a conversation, I hope you listeners can see how that dialogue completely changes it. Because instead of entering into the same old fight that you've had 6 trillion times about the same tired topics on the same tired battlegrounds, you're inviting connection right in. Because if a partner's willing to meet you there in a vulnerable way, I can almost guarantee you if it's a volatile topic, they can connect with a lot, if not most, if not all of those same emotions.
Yeah.
It's scary for me too. You're right. That bringing up X, I can totally get behind that because that's been really tough for us in the past. You know, do we want to give that a try? Do we need to wait until therapy to work that out with somebody else helping? You know, already you've gotten further in that conversation and just that exchange I gave than you will in the next 20 minutes of yelling and screaming at each other.
Exactly.
You've already gone further.
Already gone further just by being raw and honest about what you're feeling deep down inside.
Yes.
You know? And the other part I find in these conversations when it's difficult and a hard conversation, but I want to really connect, is to come at it not from a place of being right or wrong or making sure that I get all my you know, gripes out on the table, but I come at it from a place of being a curious inquirer. Mm. I'm coming at this conversation because I want to understand you.
Yes.
I'm curious. I want you to know that, and here's a big one. This is a safe place that you can dare to peel back your layers, take off your mask, and let me see you.
Yes.
That's really what I'd yearn to have happen in this conversation.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, and what you're saying is so true, right? St. Francis, this comes from the prayer of St. Francis. He had it right, you know, seeking to understand before being understood.
Exactly.
There is so much truth to that. We talk on this podcast often about getting emotionally naked with our partner.
Yes.
You know, that's something that we've mentioned before. And I use it because it's a good visual that partners can use with each other, you know, because we're engaging on intimate ground, just emotionally, not physically. How well do you think it's going to go if you look at your partner and you're telling him, disrobe, damn it. Even though I know it's going to suck, even though I know you're hideous, even though I know that what you've got to offer is crap, disrobe and let's engage. No one's responding to that. But when we go into a conversation in that fashion, right, of the, again, that hopelessness, that mind reading, that fortune telling, you always do this, or it always ends up this way, or whatever. I mean, it really would be the equivalent of a partner telling another partner, hey, yeah, we can definitely engage in sex. It's going to suck. It's going to suck. It's going to be crappy sex. It's going to be horrible, awful sex, but we can do it if you want.
I'm excited. Yeah. Let's no, get right no, to that.
Now I'm stoked, right? Now I'm super enthralled. Right. And again, we joke, but there is so much truth here, guys. Emotional and physical intimacy, there are huge ties and corollaries between how they work. And as Mark said, if you want to have a partner who is going to, somebody's got to blink, right, in these situations. Mark and I know all too well how when you get ingrained in these relationship ruts, is what I call them, in these patterns of discourse, how hard it is to change those ruts, how hard it is to do something different. But somebody has to blink. Somebody has to be willing to practice their boundaries. Somebody has to be willing to slow the conversation down. This is the passion coming out from sessions from this week. it's been a doozy. Somebody has to be the one to say, you know, I'm scared. Or I've got a lot of shame. Or I don't know if this will work. Or I don't know if we can make it.
I'm so angry at you. I don't even know if we can talk right now.
Somebody has to do the work to, as a catalyst to, again, get in that emotionally mindful centered place where they can go to that level.
Yeah.
Because unless you can go to that level, you won't ever really work out these differences. You will keep fighting the same war on different battlegrounds over and over and over again.
And if we were to bring all that to maybe one concluding principle for me, the thing, if you forget everything else we said today and you're thinking, is there one thing I can remember? It would be this final point. The way that you do these difficult conversations so that they are connecting is that the discussion, you always try to come from a place of collaboration. cooperation. What that means to me is, even though I don't agree with you, even though I'm mad at you right now, what I want you to know is that I have your back, mm-hmm. no matter what. That is the overriding and undergirding principle in this thing. And I know that you have mine. As long as we can get back somehow to that place.
Yeah.
I love you. I have your back. This is hard. We're really trying to work through this. But no matter how difficult it gets, we have each other.
Yeah.
To me, that's the center core of this whole thing working.
Oh, I totally agree. And I just want to give one quick little thought too, because it's important to recognize this. We know that you spouses who are listening to this, we totally understand that the responsibility for even listening to this podcast comes due to a deficit in the relationship and things that have happened, that have been beyond your control and that have nothing to do with you. We know that none of you asks to be in this position. I'm sure as much as you love to hang out with Mark and I for half an hour a week, or for those of us who see us on a regular basis, as much as you'd love to do that, the fact that you have to is frustrating, time consuming, draining, all those things. We know that this is difficult subject matter and stuff. And we want you to know that we hear you, and we know that you come from a place of, it's not fair, as we've talked about many times.
Yeah.
The reason why we come at it this way is not because we do not, why we're talking about this way today is not because we don't have empathy for partners. It's because, as we've talked about many times on the podcast in the past, trauma is always a one-way street. And regardless of what got us here, regardless of what got you here today, be it trauma in your marriage, trauma from your past before your marriage, or a combination of both, which is oftentimes the case, only you, along with your higher power and in conjunction to some degree, as much as is able with your partner, are you going to be able to find that healing. But we care about you spouses too much to let you fall into that place of waiting for someone to come and fix you or to make it better. We care about you too much to say that. Again, from a fairness perspective, that would make sense, but we don't want you to stay stuck. We don't want you to be stuck in that rut that we talked about in last week's episode.
Yeah.
We want you guys to be able to move forward and dialogue and figure these things out. So we just appreciate both of you for coming on. Addicts and you spouses, we appreciate you doing the work and stepping up in a scenario where you're in a situation where that you didn't ask to be in.
Yep. So. That part's hard.
It is.
And when Steve and I, we kind of get passionate and sometimes a little forceful in mm-hmm. how we're saying things, it doesn't mean that we're taking sides or we're saying that your feelings don't matter or aren't legitimate.
Not at all.
Or, that you created this somehow. We're not saying any of those things. We're just so passionate about the healing process and trying to help open up the best path forward for you. We try to say it like it is.
Absolutely.
But we also have a great deal of compassion and empathy for all of you. Well, let's do the final assignment here.
Let's do it.
As I look at this, the tendency could be, okay, let's practice what Mark and Steve said. Let's pick the biggest issue in our relationship and let's go at it.
Ta-da, we're ready.
Yeah, so we wouldn't recommend that. But we would suggest that perhaps you choose something small.
Yeah.
Maybe a little area of contention, a little area of disagreement, a little thing that keeps popping up. And start with that. Practice these techniques and this approach with that. And, kind of dip your toe in and see how it goes and do it that way a little at a time before you try to tackle the big ones.
Absolutely.
Because there's just too much involved with emotional complexity and history and all the rest of it to try to go immediately to that place.
Yes. And one thing I think we forgot to mention that is important, as you go through and you practice these conversations, I think at the end of the day, the ultimate litmus test that you have to be checking in with yourself and with your partner about is asking, is this discussion collaborative?
Mm-hmm.
Is it still collaborative? Right? Yes. Because things can go, in the world of emotion, things can go awry real quick, which is where that skill of taking a break that we've talked about so often in the past comes in. And we know that that's hard, as we indicated, but as long as the discussion is collaborative, it may be uncomfortable, but if it's collaborative and there's still safety, then you should be pushing into it where you can. But if it does become unsafe, it becomes toxic. If the collaboration leaves, now the relationship is just taking broadsides, and that's where you need to love it enough to step away from it for a minute.
Exactly. So. Yeah. Great, great advice. All right. Well, that's okay. It for this week. Hope all of you go out there and have some difficult conversations that will bring some true connection into your life.
Absolutely. Have a great week, everybody.
See ya. That's all for today. Thanks for joining us. And remember, the opposite of addiction isn't sobriety, it's connection. Together, we can do the impossible.
To learn more about Mark and Steve and to listen to more podcast episodes, visit us at pbscpodcast.com. Everything expressed on the PBSC podcast are the opinions of the hosts and the participants and is for informational and educational purposes only. This podcast should not be considered mental health therapy or as a substitute thereof. It is strongly recommended that you seek out the clinical guidance of an individual qualified mental health professional. If you're experiencing thoughts of suicide, self-harm, or a desire to harm others, please dial 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.